Poetry on the Radio, poetry in and around the ACT. Today, we continue our conversation with Barkindji artist and poet, Barina South. I'm Kimberly K. Williams. Barina South is a Barkindji artist and poet who writes about land, culture, and history. She is a current member of the First Nations Australia Writers Network and a director of Us Mob Writing. In 2023, she was awarded a Varuna First Nations Fellowship, and her work appeared in the online journals Authora Australis and a special issue of the Teesta Review, a journal of poetry in Kolkata, India. In 2022, Barina South was published in the journal Rabbit and was appointed writer-in-residence at University of Canberra, and she was one of five Australian poets selected to participate in Invisible Walls, Poetry is a Doorway to Intercultural Understanding, a partnership between the University of South Australia and Sogong University in Seoul. She has appeared in two anthologies published by the ACT region Us Mob Writers Group, Too Deadly, Our Voice, Our Way of Business, and the recent Karaka. Peter Monahan and I spoke to Barina South in December 2023. At the end of last week, Barina South was telling us about Us Mob Writers Group. This week, we take it up from there.
Barina, you mentioned the Us Mob Writing Group. Mm. Most people won't know what that is. Can you explain what it is and who's in it and you know where it exists?
The Us Mob Writing Group is a writers group for First Nations writers, Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander writers. It just happens to be all women, but that's not on purpose. We did have a few males join the group, so it's not exclusively female, but we welcome anyone. So it's primarily a writers group to support Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander writers in the ACT and surrounds. I'm the surround because I live in Queanbeyan. Everybody else lives in the ACT. But it's a writers group that we get together monthly, and we just talk about our writing practice, where we want to take the writers group, you know, seeking funding so people can attend various festivals. We sometimes have writing tasks where somebody will come up with a word. We have 2 weeks to write something and send that in, just to keep people writing. Mm-hmm. From those various tasks, you know, we look at future publications. We've just brought Karaka out. That's based on some of the work from these workshops with, like, Yvette Holt, Melissa Lashenko, Ellen Van Neven, who come and do workshops with us, but also our writing tasks as well. And put together an anthology. We're also looking at doing chapbooks, where we're going to pair with another writer in the group to come up with some chapbooks. What works well with this writers group, because I was also part of the Queanbeyan writers group as well, what works well with the Us Mob writers group is that we don't critique each other's work. And I think that's the strength of the writers group. So everybody's on their own path. And we just merge every month, just check in, touch base, see where we want to go, what people are up to, and then everybody goes on their own path. When I was in the Queanbeyan Writers Group, we did critique work, and I think you have to be a strong person to accept critique mm-hmm. from your peers, and not everybody in the group was at that level of accepting feedback mm-hmm. and that sort of didn't make for a very successful group. So I think that's what makes this group so good, is that we don't critique each other's work. Everybody is allowed to just do what they want to do.
Sometimes it seems important for writers to simply hold space for each other, and it sounds like that's what Us Mob does. You have 2 anthologies? Are there more?
There was another one. It was Close of Business, but I just started with the group at that time. And I wasn't confident to have my work published in the anthology. Mm-hmm. So I had the opportunity to submit something, but I didn't at the time.
Something that arises from that group, you talked about it a bit early on, it's the idea of heritage and inheritance. You talked about, in a sense, inheriting women's stories. That's clearly very important. It provides a freshness to your poetry that's really underscored by your use of language. But that's presumably the way you think. It's not an exoticism, it's the way you think.
That's right. Yeah, so everything I write is 100% what I feel and think and see and want to put down on paper. And I, as mentioned before, I haven't studied poetry, so I'm not sure what you call it, but it's just how I write.
Yeah. But you use Barkindji language.
Yeah.
And in a sense, you'd say, well, we're in Australia, why not? That's, in, if anything, that makes more sense than not using it.
Yeah, I don't use it all the time. I'm very careful when I, because I don't want to saturate, you know, the poetry just for the sake of putting the words in there. I only very rarely put words in, and it's only when I really feel like there's a need for words, because it's not also, as I mentioned before, I write for myself and for the reader, so I try to use words that allows the reader to understand what I'm saying, that it doesn't alienate them but brings them on that journey. So that's why I use certain words at certain times. One of the poems that I've got here is called Kira Kira. That, so that's where I've probably used the most language. I work in the heritage space. I work with the repatriation of ancestors back to country. So that's what influenced this poem. I was involved with the return of Mungo Man and the various individuals back to country a few years ago, back to Barkindji and the other nation's country as well. So,
Barina South is referring here to efforts to repatriate 40,000-year-old human remains that anthropologists had found about 50 years ago at Lake Mungo in the World Heritage-listed Willandra Lakes region of New South Wales.
This is influenced by that. Kira Kira. She brings the bones. I sit on the ground. I fidget. We sit, not time. She looks up. Wedge tail soars, circle, rise. I count the hours past and the hours left. Not time. Our hands rest across knees. Fingers dip gently into country. Inhale. Exhale. Stale breath leaves me. Rain marks skin. Old songs are sung, moon rises, vibrating with beat. Nyai wimpincha kira kira, nyai wimpincha kira kira. The bones are in my hands, and I wait.
What do those words mean?
Nyai means a greeting, hello, Aboriginal people. Wimpincha means Aboriginal person, and kira kira is land. So it's about when you get to that part of the poem, when the person who's being taught, silently being taught to be patient, to rest, to take the stale breath out and just to rest into country, it's about, hello, you Aboriginal person, to country. Hello to country, Aboriginal person.
The bones are in my hands and I wait. It's like the bones are the ancestral inheritance, or
it's not the actual bones itself, but it's just the passing on of knowledge, the passing on of culture.
Earlier, somebody, a poet we had in here, was Anita Patel, who, as she says, she has no native tongue because of how she was raised in different countries, and she uses in a very natural way elements or just snatches of language, or she blends them in with the English. And in that case, and in your case too, I think what it drives home to a listener from, you know, the colonial group is how much Australia sort of lacks by not paying attention to the richness of that inheritance. Even sonically, you're reminded that you're in a place that's quite different from what you were told, almost, or what you've come to assume.
Yeah, that's right. So that's why I just wanted to use the language at the end of that, because that's when the person, either me or someone else, they take the time to listen and not rush, not fidget, and not count how long it's going to take, that you eventually will get to that point where you will feel the rain, you will hear the old songs, and you'll take notice of the moon rising, and then that's when you listen to country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the purpose of that poem.
I love that line, fingers dip gently, or that phrase, you know, this idea that there is no rush, that it's experiential, but that it can be gentle. I love that.
That we love our birds in Canberra, and your poem Cockatoos is a great one. Can you read that one too?
I write a lot about birds. where I live, it's just a little bit out of Queanbeyan, 2.5 acres, and I think we see about 20 to 30 different birds a day.
Wow.
So this is Cockatoos. My eyes caress his limbs. Diaphanous droplets glisten like a crown on the canopy. I press against the cool bark. From the valley floor, weela, weela, weela. A mournful cry that circled all day, bringing more makara. Some land heavy, loosen the jewels that shower down onto the nape of my neck. Others crack pine cones. A glimpse of yellow blushed cheek, I eavesdrop on clicks and chatter, envious of their gentle aloe preening. As they leave, believing I can touch their somber underbellies, reach out, I am home.
Can you gloss that word, makara? What is that?
That's rain.
But what I love listening to you read this out loud is the crackling sounds throughout, right? Not just once or twice, but crack, you know, the crackling all the way through, or the ch's and the k's too, and how that's like the chatter of birds.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really onomatopoetic.
Yeah, I adore black cockatoos. And when they do come and they do land in the trees, I do go down and listen to them. They don't come very often, but they always bring the rain. And that's why I chose that, to put that Aboriginal word in there, because if you know the black cockatoos, you'll know that that will refer to rain, makara. Ah. Yeah, and that's how they come. And I always are drawn to them. And living in the Blue Mountains, I was grew up in Glenbrook in the Blue Mountains, and used to get a lot of black cockatoos at the foothills of the mountains. You don't get them so much there anymore. And my brother, he used to call me Leah, Leah. And that was the sound of the black cockatoos.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because he couldn't say Barina, so he would say Leah, Leah. and that's that connection to the black cockatoos, and I've always been drawn to them. They're not my totem or anything, but I'm always drawn to those birds. And when I'm up at Katoomba at Varuna, I felt like they were luring me away. So they would come and fly low, and then I would go out and follow them, because I always want to get a tail feather. And I was saying, please, please drop a tail feather. But they didn't. They dropped a wing feather, so that was okay. But then they kept flying from tree to tree, and I was following them. And then they decided to just take off, and they went down into the valley. And obviously I can't go down in the valley.
So I've been here 4.5 years. I can't believe that. And I saw them for the first time in the wild just a few months ago. I was walking with the poet Penelope Leyland. I don't know if you're from that. She's from here. And she could hear them. She knew their sound. And so we were at the botanical gardens. And so we tracked them and just stared.
Yeah, and they fly so low. And
so
they're just
beautiful.
Yeah, I love them. So that's
one of the things we haven't spoken about, Barina, is that you were part of a project involving Australian and Korean poets. What was that about? And I'd be interested to hear you talk about how you went about translating some of the concepts in your poems, some of the words and ideas.
Yeah, it was one of, I think, 6 Australian poets selected to participate in a project called Invisible Walls. And it was about partnering poets in South Korea and Australia together and to see what would come out of that exchange. And we would have regular meetings with an interpreter who would translate, and which was a really interesting process. It was very bit disjointed, because you say something and then they've got to try and translate it, obviously, into South Korean. And some of the words and things that I was talking about, they also didn't have that cultural awareness. So I had to kind of change the way I was phrasing things so the translator could translate it. It was really great. I really loved the process. And we met over a number of months. And from that, we were asked to create some new work. And that'll be published next year in Cordite.
Ah, yeah. That's so cool. Do you know which month?
February, I think.
February, yeah. So coming soon.
Yeah.
Coming soon to Cordite.
Yeah. I just did an interview with Cordite on the process. So they're going to be launching that next year. One thing that we did have in common was middens. So I was talking about, because as I mentioned, I work in heritage, so I was protecting some ancestors that had been washed out from a midden, shell midden on the coast.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to her about middens, and they have middens, of course, you know. And so that was one thing that we had in common, was this these places of where, you know, things are discarded after eating, and pottery for South Korea, and these places that I didn't really think about in terms of South Korea, but yeah, we both had this experience and understanding of middens.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote one of the poems about middens.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned that that project was interesting from a variety of standpoints, and one that it opened doorways culturally, you know, between people, but also brought awareness to yourself about yourself. What happened?
I think because I was previously writing by myself, there was then a sort of partnering with another person that wasn't in the room with me, who I didn't know, that was from another country, who I didn't understand. So my poems, I did notice that my poems changed. Well, they would have had to have changed, and they did. And when I was looking back at them, because I've just collated all my poems, I've sent them off to various publishing houses because I'd like to publish a collection of poems. And when I was reading through them, you can really see they really stand out, really different to the rest of the work, in a good way. And so there's certain words that I've used in the poem that I would not have used normally if I hadn't met the woman from the other poet from South Korea. And she was talking to me about over there was this terrible boat accident and all these children drowned.
Mm.
And so for that anniversary, poets write poems in memory of those children.
Mm.
And I quite thought that was a very interesting idea. And so that's influenced one of my poems. So if I hadn't met her and hadn't heard of that story, probably wouldn't have known to write about writing 100 poems by 100 poets for hundreds of children that had passed. Yeah, so that's sort of how it changed. Yeah. But it gave me confidence as well, because I just come back from Varuna and I'd created all this work. And I thought, well, bugger it, I'm going to apply for this. And I did, and it was selected. And it was like, oh, wow, you know, somebody's, you know, appreciating my work. And that's taken me on a trajectory of being more confident with my work, writing more, taking more opportunities, putting myself out there more.
Mm-hmm.
So this year has been really amazing. I was asked to write an ekphrastic poem for the National Gallery of Australia through Red Room. So I've become a Red Room poet now. I was awarded the First Nations Fellowship for Varuna. So I go back to Varuna in January. I've been published in a few online journals, in Rabbit as well. I've also been published in a few online journals in India as well. So getting out there and applying for things, and now at a point where I'm confident to bring all my work together to then submit it for people to consider it as a collection for publication. So, yeah.
It's exciting. It's a journey.
It is.
Yeah.
It just has to take one or two things like that to happen for you to go, yeah, okay.
That's right.
Well, maybe I do have something to offer, and then you just go for it.
It's exciting.
Mm.
I wondered if you would just maybe we could finish by reading a couple poems from Karaka because it's the most recent publication.
Yep.
If you don't mind.
Great. I've got two poems in this anthology. The first one I'll read is untitled. I remember the day the sky died. Arms hung heavy from my shoulders. Feet were slow to move, head too heavy to lift. I would reach the edge. It was going to take time. Focused on the horizon, aim was to keep moving, temptation was to lie down. I conjured up the courage, forced myself to fall. Face down, grit coated my lips, dust filled my nostrils. Waiting, hoping someone might discover me before dark. The second poem is called Cloth. A piece of torn cloth has caught my eye, hooked on the barbed wire, trying to be free, flapping in morse, help me. It gives up its fight when the wind leaves it alone, faded a captive for some time. A loose thread flies on its own, a sign of hope for the others.
Here again are poems we heard Barina South read last week.
This poem's called A Few of My Favourite Things. Dip my arms into hot wax, smash my shin with a hammer, tie my long hair to the rafter, drop down and swing. Scrape off the rust with my teeth. Hold a lit match on my eye and an ice cube on the other. Eat a tablespoon of flour. Drink a cup of vinegar. Lick a handful of salt with a cut tongue and ulcered mouth. Insert a long, sharp needle in my ear. Hit the other hard with a paddle. Open cheeks with a razor and insert hot coals. The little small toe against the bed leg. Slowly peel back your fingernails. Wrap your thighs in barbed wire and run. These are a few of my favourite things. Ghost gum. Upon the once young, creamy, pink-tinged skin, pooled blood appears on the surface, caused by previous contusions, leaving her discoloured. Recent lesions continue hemorrhaging, old sores still weeping, the disfigured and swollen skin now tight, shiny, ready to split. Her veins draw the healing sap to the surface to medicate all wounds. Seasonally white, powdery bark scales are shed, stolen by the hot wind. Saucer-like seeds fall out of wide-open woody mouths of those who sing as they regurgitate the beginning of another. In the cool of the night, respite, she reaches up, gently sways, dancing in time with the stars as they sweep across the desert night sky. Kira Kira. She brings the bones. I sit on the ground. I fidget. We sit, not time. She looks up, wedge tail soars, circle, rise. I count the hours past and the hours left, not time. Our hands rest across knees, fingers dip gently into country. Inhale, exhale. Stale breath leaves me. Rain marks skin, old songs are sung, moon rises, vibrating with beat. Nyai wimpancha kira kira, nyai wimpancha kira kira. The bones are in my hands and I wait. cockatoos. My eyes caress his limbs, diaphanous droplets glisten like a crown on the canopy. I press against the cool bark. From the valley floor, Wheela, Wheela, Wheela. A mournful cry that circled all day, bringing more Makara. Some land heavy, loosen the jewels that shower down onto the nape of my neck. Others crack pine cones. A glimpse of yellow blushed cheek, I eavesdrop on clicks and chatter, envious of their gentle aloe preening. As they leave, believing I can touch their somber underbellies, reach out, I am home. Untitled. I remember the day the sky died. Arms hung heavy from my shoulders. Feet were slow to move, head too heavy to lift. I would reach the edge. It was going to take time. Focused on the horizon, aim was to keep moving, temptation was to lie down. I conjured up the courage, forced myself to fall. Face down, grit coated my lips, dust filled my nostrils. Waiting, hoping someone might discover me before dark. Cloth. A piece of torn cloth has caught my eye, hooked on the barbed wire, trying to be free, flapping in morse, help me. It gives up its fight when the wind leaves it alone, faded a captive for some time. A loose thread flies on its own, a sign of hope for the others.
Today, and on last week's episode of Poetry on the Radio, our guest has been Barkindji poet and artist, Barina South. I'm Kimberly K. Williams.
This is Peter Monahan. I'm the producer of Poetry on the Radio. This episode marks 1 year of broadcast of the program, so I'd like to take this opportunity to thank everybody who's taken part, to the co-hosts, Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Searles, to our helper, Annika Grant, and to all the poets who've participated. And that includes all the poets who've taken part in our weekly short segments that are aired each Thursday on Arts Cafe between 1:15 and 1:30. Thank you very much.
I'm Kimberly K. Williams, and I want to acknowledge 1 year of Poetry on the Radio, first by thanking the poets who came in with busy schedules and busy lives and spent time interviewing with us to talk about poetry. And I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Peter Searles and Peter Monahan, and I'd also like to thank Arts Sound FM Radio.
Poetry on the Radio is produced weekly on unceded traditional land in the studios of Arts Sound FM and airs Sundays at 4:30 p.m. and again at 10:30 p.m. on Mondays and online at artsound.fm. Series hosts are Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Searles, who produced the program with me, Peter Monahan. Our theme is an imagining of an ancient Greek hymn to the muse Calliope by Gregoria Paniagua and the Atrium Musica de Madrid.